language. An interesting piece in the NZ Initiative weekly newsletter. NZ Initiative, for those who don't know, is the sort of the child born out of the old business roundtable. Some people give it the label of a right-wing think tank. One of its research fellows, Briar Lipson, took up the issue of making language compulsory. This, of course, in the wake of Māori Language Week, which we had in the past week. Momentum, of course, appears to have been building to make the language compulsory, and to some degree, it's gaining some traction. While execution of such an idea is still some way off, given the sparsity of fluent Te Reo speakers, this movement isn't going away, and it makes sense to look for the overseas experience. Well, Briar Lipson grew up in Wales, where it's been compulsory for children between 5 and 16 to learn Welsh for the past two decades. In spite of this, census data in the last three censuses have shown that the proportion of 20 to 44-year-olds who report being able to speak Welsh has remained stubborn at around 15%. The issue is, should Māori teaching be made compulsory in New Zealand? Do you actually achieve the opposite effect? Your thoughts, Carlo. Do you think, in fact, that it would work if we made learning Te Reo compulsory?
I just found this a really strange article, and I was trying to think about why the comparison with Wales, and their research findings were inconclusive. Even they said it was inconclusive, but then it jumped straight to politicians stay out and leave it in the hands of parents. Like, actually, that's a line. And so I didn't know who the New Zealand Initiative was, and then got very curious and did a big Google and thought, are there any Māori people working for this organisation? No. Are there any Māori people on the board? No. Who is this group kind of talking to diversity when they actually demonstrate no diversity whatsoever? And so I just thought Wales, I was like, what percentage is Indigenous? And it was like 66%. And so they kind of, as a self-determining majority, decided that they would try and reclaim their Indigenous language. It's quite different, I think, from our situation where you have an ethnic minority really, really struggling to reclaim their language. I just couldn't even see why we were comparing like an apple with an orange or a cucumber wrapped in plastic.
So you don't accept then the conclusion, which is that allowing flexibility and making it voluntary is likely to advance the cause of Te Reo rather than trying to make it compulsory?
I just thought that it was really poorly conducted research that had no comparative value to Aotearoa New Zealand, that was actually inconclusive, that landed with a statement that politicians stay out. So I don't know. I just thought, why? Why is this article out in the public domain when we've just had like a fantastic week or Te Reo Māori?
Well, perhaps it's the diversity of opinion, but not reflected in the necessary diversity of the organisation.
I don't know. I just was like, why?
Simon, would you make it?
Well, yeah, it's going to take a while to get to compulsory anyway, isn't it? But I think one of the things about the move towards that is that if you're talking that way, you're talking about something that we would hope that everybody, every child at school, you know, has in their heads, has the experience of. If you're talking only about voluntary, then you're creating a situation where over time you've got a society comprised of the kids who did it and the kids who didn't. And that's kind of what we've got now, but I don't think it's a great advance to say that that's the best way forward. I think one of the things that's really important about studying the language, studying Te Reo, is that it's not just about learning the language. It's a much, to my mind, it is much more fundamental than that. It's about understanding value. It's about understanding culture and behaviour. It's about getting an appreciation of what is at the core of this country and at the core of the way in which Māori society operates and the way in which Māori and Pākehā societies and all the other societies here
We do need to change the scope of this conversation, don't we? Because too much of the analysis comes down to almost vocational perspective. Yeah. In other words, can you use it? No, you can't use it. What earthly use is it? So therefore, it's not worth making it compulsory.
Why? I would have thought being fluent in Te Reo would be possibly the best meal ticket.
I know so many chief executives that are fluent in Te Reo, and it's their absolute edge.
And in another 10 years' time, that's going to be pretty much expected, isn't it? You know, so I mean, that's a nonsense argument. But I think you're right, Giles. The wider perspective, you know, Karen Reid was on television last night talking about kotahitanga, that value of togetherness, which was a remarkable thing. I thought he in Japan, talking about the sense of pride he had coming from this country and being able to express it through that value. That's a little thing that points to something that's much bigger. And if we had a society where we understood those things much more deeply because we had lived them through our experience of going through school and learning those things and living them, you know, I think we'd have a pretty exciting country here.
It would be, and much better than the early English education I had in a grammar school there, where they taught English, French, German, Spanish, ancient Greek and Latin.
There you go.
And I can tell you the Greek has stuck with me ever since.
It's really interesting. So I did a little bit of research on this, and apparently every 14 days a language dies, and Hebrew was extinct for like 200 years, and then they revived it. So, I mean, you think about what gets lost when a language like Hebrew gets lost, and then what is regained, and then you just start realising it's way more than just words. I would have to say that taking Te Reo at school was probably the best career move I made. Yeah.